How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Normally, we are joined by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com, but not today. Mike is down in New Orleans drinking. He's inebriated right now. Actually, I don't know if that's the case, but he is down there in New Orleans. He was down there for the UFC show last night, UFC Fight Night Live, Jake versus Jake, which we'll be talking about on today's show. In place of Sempervivi, our new permanent co-host, at least for this week, Josh Nason is here on the show. He, of course, works on our website as well, Fight Magazine, a number of other outlets. We'll talk to him in just a moment. We are here to talk all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA, Sirius Channel 94, worldwide at WrestlingObserver.com. So much stuff to talk about today, last night's UFC event. We're going to talk about the Floyd Mayweather situation. Should a man protect himself at all times? Obviously, he should. What happened last night in the Mayweather fight? We'll talk to Josh Nason about that, as well as a preview for tonight's Night of Champions pay-per-view. WWE's, well, their only pay-per-view of September. I was going to say their big pay-per-view. It's the only one. It is headlined by Triple H versus CM Punk. Also, two championship matches, John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio, and Randy Orton versus Mark Henry. We'll talk about that show, plus SmackDown this Friday night. The go-home show for this event. Raw this past Monday as well. And preview that event. We'll also talk about last Sunday's pay-per-view, that being the TNA No Surrender event, a rather depressing pay-per-view. We'll talk about that show, all of the matches, and how it led to TV this week, where, in fact, we got the first Flair versus Sting match since 2001. Coincidentally, right before WCW went out of business. We're going to talk about this match, what happened to Ric Flair, injury update on him, how he's feeling, and how that leads to the Bound for Glory pay-per-view in November, which, if you watch the TV, there has been a stick thrown in the spoke of that match. Is Hogan and Sting even happening? We're going to talk to you on that show. Tons of other news as well, including the return of The Rock to the ring at Survivor Series. All of that in the next 2 hours here at Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Josh Nason, also of WrestlingObserver.com, Fight Magazine. Josh is here to take the place of Mike Sempervivi, who's down drinking and gallivanting in New Orleans. And Josh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. And, you know, after listening to this show for years and years and years with the Semp and yourself, I'm proud to say that today you and I, probably a main event anywhere in the country.
Any armory in the country, that's right. Now, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, some of the different outlets you write for, and then we shall get the show on the road.
Well, I've been writing since 2005 on UFC. I was a lifetime pro wrestling fan. Actually, was a indie ring announcer back in the day, back in my heyday, in Portland, Maine, for the Eastern Wrestling Alliance. Used to do some writing for my college newspaper back in the boom period. All about, you know, during the then WWF, WCW, Monday Night Wars, and so on, and transition to MMA writing. And to date, obviously, I'm the Ultimate Fighter reporter for the site. Also, do some other stuff. We do shows every 2 weeks, interviewing a different MMA personality. And also, I write for Fight Magazine. I've been doing that for several years, and I also host a show every Thursday night on WGAMRadio.com. It's a ESPN Radio New Hampshire affiliate, and we interview people and talk about all the latest in mixed martial arts, and that keeps me pretty busy.
So since you mentioned it, I know we're going to talk about the UFC event last night, but you mentioned Ultimate Fighter. You do write the reports at WrestlingObserver.com, and the new season starts this coming Wednesday night. Anybody that watched last night's show probably saw the preview that they did. It's a bunch of guys in a house getting drunk, and then they get in fights. Same thing we've seen for 13 other seasons thus far. Are you excited for this particular season, or to you, has this show run its course?
Well, I'm excited for this season after watching last night's preview, simply because there's a mariachi band and donkeys that show up at some point during the season. That's after all these years, this is why I'm excited for the show now. That's what it's come to. Mariachi band and donkeys.
Sure.
Have me excited, yes. So I'm excited just for the fact that it's two different weight classes with your bantamweights and your featherweights. I'm excited for that because I think potentially that can add to more exciting fights. The personalities on the show with Bisping and Miller, whether or not you may think it's simply pre-hype that the guys don't like each other, but it seems to be all intents and purposes that they don't. Two very different personalities, polarizing personalities, with Jason Mayhem Miller, the best known for Bully Beatdown, and Michael Bisping, best known for being a British fighter who not a lot of people like stateside, and the receiving end of probably one of the most famous knockouts in UFC history at UFC 100 on the hands of Dan Henderson. So I'm very excited for the season. 2 hours this Wednesday night. They haven't done that before. I do like visually how they're going to start with the they're going to have the fights actually not Mohegan Sun, Mandalay Bay, and that's kind of a different element before they even get to the house. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm always excited for the start of every season. But I think the lighter weight classes are what's going to either help this or hurt this season.
Hold on a second. They're doing the pre-fights to get into the house at the Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, they actually have. I believe it's the Mandalay Bay. It's not the UFC training center. So the idea is that the pre-fights to get into the house, the qualifying fights, are going to be actually in the Mandalay Bay. So they actually, if you actually saw, there's an 8-minute clip we actually had on the front of the site, which you can go at thewrestlingobserver.com. So 8-minute clip, they actually show some of the posters around and so on, some of the other great fights. So yeah, they actually have an actual arena booked out for the pre-fights.
So the biggest empty arena matches of all time.
Yeah, just like Rock and Mick Foley, that Super Bowl halftime show a few years ago.
So I hope that someone here has a forklift dropped on them.
I visually can see that now with how big Rock's eyes were when that forklift was dropping down and thinking, my God, this is pro wrestling, but how cheesy can it get?
Sure.
I don't know if any forklifts will be like that, or maybe they'll get a good shot of Dana White's eyes wide open like that. But yeah, it's an empty arena, matchups with lights and everything. So yeah, should be fun. Looking forward to it.
Now, last night was UFC Fight Night, Ellenberger versus Shields, Jake versus Jake. And on the front page of our website, you normally do the staff picks for the event. And I didn't have time to go through all of the different matches, but I did send you my one staff pick for Shields and Ellenberger. And I predicted that Ellenberger was going to knock Shields out. And you demanded I come up with the rest of my predictions, and I didn't. So my prediction didn't end up in the actual post on the front page. But tell me now, Josh, I was right about this.
You are absolutely correct. Even though you picked the one fight, and I said just have your cats pick the other fights. However you want to pick those other four, you did not. But yeah, we'll give you credit for that. And overall, it seemed that a lot of people were going to go with Ellenberger, but some people still kind of held true to Shields. But that was still how it went down was very sudden. Ellenberger defeating Shields by first round TKO, 53 seconds. It was over very quickly, and there was no doubt about it. Shields was trying to single leg the referee after the fight, one of those classic moves, so he was definitely out. So you really don't know with Shields. It's tough because this is his second defeat in a row. He just lost to GSP back in April. Obviously, that was a much more competitive bout than this. But obviously well known that Jack Shields, Jake's father, died 3 weeks ago. Someone very influential in his life, his manager, actually. So you wonder how that mentally would have played out, if it's going to be one way or another. So Shields definitely lost, and Ellenberger is a fast rising prospect, 170 pounds. So you wonder kind of where it's going to go from here. But Shields, this is one of those fights where you kind of almost chalk it up to there's a lot of other stuff going on in his life.
I would chalk it up to that normally, and I'm sure that actually played a part in it, but. I mean, to me, just looking at Jake Shields, as some people are aware, he has gone full vegan. No meat whatsoever. Full vegan diet. And he came into the cage and just... I've never seen Jake Shields look like this. I shouldn't say that. I saw him look much worse one day, getting into an elevator after a really, really hard weight cut. But he got into the cage last night and... just very skinny, no definition, looked flat, I don't want to say frail, but he looked really thin. And he was thrown around like a rag doll and beaten on. And, I know it's very, very hard to have lost his father, but you know, one thing that Ellenberger said is that, you know, he felt very, very bad for Jake, too. And you know, it was rough for him. I mean, this was just a rough fight for everybody. Because, you know, this poor guy lost his dad, and now you're supposed to go in there and beat on this dude. I mean, it was tough for everybody involved. But, you know, all extenuating circumstances aside, you know, Jake's physique in the ring, I think, spoke more to his new diet. And I guess we'll see in future fights, but, you know, he came into the ring looking like not Jake Shields, and it was not, you know, sort of like a deal where psychologically he wasn't there. I mean, he looked like he always looks before a fight, except physically he looked very, very different, which may have been the result of his new diet.
Yeah, well, I think, in the, you know, contrast, Ellenberger looks so thick and strong, and, you know, there's a reason they call him the Juggernaut, which is one of my favorite UFC nicknames at the moment. But he looked physically bigger, and you've said it really great. I mean, he's able to throw him around, dominate him, and just took him down. And, you know, for a guy that has a wrestling background, this is exactly the type of dude the UFC likes. Someone that has that wrestling background but has transferred over to just knocking dudes out. And I believe now it's 5 of his last 6, I believe, he's won via KO or TKO. So he's a 170-pounder that is definitely on the rise. But you're right, Shields did not look physically that stacked, I guess you could say. Just looked kind of small. But again, you don't know what the last 3 weeks played into it, how difficult that win. And really, I'll kind of chalk this up to one of those things. And the key will be his next fight, because that next fight will be his fourth in UFC. The first one, obviously, that you alluded to was against Martin Campman, the terrible weight cut. He looked awful in that fight. Held his own against GSP. And then, obviously, the result, which happened last night. So I guess we'll see what happens in his next fight. But I would suggest he takes the rest of the year off, and we don't see him until the beginning of next year.
What do you do with Ellenberger at this point?
Oh, boy, he is right up there in the mix, so to speak. I think you're going after top five, another top five guy, and if he's ready to go, this is another major. He has that look, he has that finishing ability, he just doesn't have the name. So I think you really have to work on educating him, building him up to the audience. But yeah, I'd say a top three guy is next in his sights.
Do you think by the end of the year, I shouldn't say by the end of the year, by the end of 2012, title shot in his future potentially?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I would be intrigued to see him go up against the winner of Diaz and Penn coming up, or perhaps the loser, if Carlos Condit loses to GSP. I think he's ready for one of those four guys. I think that'd be kind of interesting. Not a title shot yet, but I think, I tell you what.
Actually, hold on one sec. We're going to head to a break. We'll talk about this more when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Josh Nason, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, Josh was talking about the potential of a title shot for Jake Ellenberger somewhere down the road. Mentioned Carlos Condit, and Condit beat Ellenberger via split decision, and Ellenberger thinks, new fighter, I'd kill that guy now. So potentially, if GSP beats Condit, you could put Ellenberger and Condit together, and if Ellenberger wins, perhaps a title shot in 2012.
Yeah, I think with he's right there. Like I was saying, you know, a Diaz Penn winner perhaps might be interesting. But then again, if Diaz wins and GSP wins, that fight might get made again, which would be interesting in its own right. But you know, looking at 170 pounds, there's a lot of interesting talent here. I was actually just kind of going to take a look. Guys that come to mind, you know, high level guys. John Fitch is obviously booked in a fight next. So he's right up there. Again, Diaz and Penn are right up there. So Carlos Condit, I think that you have to have one of those upper echelon guys to test him against. But yeah, top level fights from here on out. But yeah, definitely, I can see Ellenberger getting a title shot. Depending on how things play out, I can see him getting a title shot probably by the summer of 2012.
All right, let's talk about the rest of the show. Not exactly the most exciting UFC event of all time. I would suspect that it's not going to do a very good rating, especially going up against the Mayweather fight. And what were your thoughts? We'll talk about Mayweather in a second. Thoughts on the rest of the show?
Boring. I love MMA. I could not get excited for this event. And even watching, I was just like, oh, my God, this is just, will this fight, this show ever get going? It had its moments. Alan Belcher, I didn't see any of the Facebook fights for the first time, which was, I understand there's some decent fights on that with some very interesting names that we can get to in a minute. But, you know, the event started out with a nice hometown story. Alan Belcher coming back after 16 months taking on Jason McDonald. Belcher grew up in Biloxi, Mississippi, which is about an hour or so away from New Orleans, so it's a good contingent there. Belcher coming back, first-round submission, strikes, looked great. Just absolutely, he went in there and took out his frustrations over the past year and a half on McDonald. And he just, yeah, he's a guy at 185 pounds that he was on that rise before he got hurt. And then he just had that unfortunate time off. It looks like he's fresh and ready to go. And, you know, he's a guy you could start kind of moving up that mix and potentially see what he's got next.
Yeah, the show itself, I mean, I watched it. I wasn't horribly bored or anything like that. The Brookins fight, the Jonathan Brookins fight with Eric Koch, it was pretty horrible. But even
it was just two guys that I thought that was going to be a great fight because Koch had coming there on a really nice win streak. Brookins, a former top 12 winner, and had been out for it was last December when he fought Michael Johnson and actually won, and he hasn't fought since then due to injuries. I was expecting a little bit more out of that fight. It was very dull, just a lot of cage grappling, not much with it, but Koch winning that via unanimous decision. And then McGee versus Yang, Court McGee and Donghee Yang, it was boring until the third round, then that was a really fun third round.
You know, this is a kind of a strange comparison, and it's really not UFC's fault, but when I think about Jonathan Brookins, you know, he was an Ultimate Fighter winner just a couple of seasons ago, and, you know, here he is coming in and he loses in a boring fight. You know, they got another season of Ultimate Fighter that's coming up here, and it kind of is like, it's kind of like, you know, NXT with WWE, where you've got this show and you really want people to watch it, but nobody does. And, you know, part of the reason for that is you get these winners and they come to WWE and they're not pushed as top flight main eventers. You know, Wade Barrett was for a little while, but now he's just a guy. And, you know, they've had some other winners that quite frankly, I don't think anyone here could even remember their names because they won when the show was on the internet. And then they had very brief run on SmackDown. And now they're gone again. And it's kind of like that with Ultimate Fighter. I mean, you want people interested in this show. You want people to think that this show matters and means something. But, you know, from about season, I don't know, you know, six or seven seasons ago, it started kind of being a case where, you know, Amir Sadala wins. What has Amir Sadala done since? You know, and you can just go through a list of past winners. And, you know, you're with this show with God knows how many seasons there have been thus far. And you've got UFC and you've got Strikeforce, at least for the time being. And you've got Bellator. And really anybody of any value is either in UFC, Strikeforce, or Bellator. And so all of the guys that are just on their way up, I mean, I hate to say scraping the bottom of the barrel, but if there were guys that were really, really impressive that were not in UFC, Strikeforce, or Bellator yet, they probably would be in one of those places very quickly. So you end up getting these guys, a lot of guys that have had just a couple of pro fights, and, you know, they go on this show, and one guy wins, and bam, he's sort of in the deep water of UFC, and it's tough to hang. And it kind of makes the show, it sort of almost takes the value out of the show. Like, the show is now all about the coaches, you know? And that's the key to the season to me. If you've got a great dynamic between the coaches, two coaches that obviously hate each other and can cut promos on each other and that sort of thing, it's going to be a good season. And if you have two coaches, even if they're big names, like Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos, they've got no problem with each other, then, you know, what's the incentive to see the show? The coaches like each other, or at least they respect each other. You know, whoever wins the season, they're probably not going to go all that far in UFC. You know, maybe the occasional one will, but most likely they're just going to be guys. And it makes it very difficult to care about the show.
I would agree. The show has been, you know, has been plagued by this. If you, I guess, a desire or a lack of desire to change it up, and luckily it sounds like next year with the Fox deal, already they're looking to make some sweeping changes to the format once it goes to FX with live fights on Friday nights. Footage will be shot that week, will be aired that Friday, so the stuff will be more fresh. So I think that's a good approach to take it. But you're right. You know, one of the issues with the Ultimate Fighter has been that the idea was that early on, you know, the winner got the contract and the other guys had to try to fight their way back in the UFC literally. It's not the case anymore. It hasn't been for a while. I mean, there's guys up and down this card that were on past seasons of the Ultimate Fighter, you know, and these are average guys, Clay Harbison, Seth Basinski, Shamar Bailey, who fought some of the most boring fights during that Lesnar season from a year ago. and somehow he's on the show. He's actually in the UFC, and you have Jonathan Brookins and Court McGee, who actually won, and they're placed on the main card. It's like, well, what's the incentive? You're going to get a shot anyway. What's the big deal for the guy winning the show? What makes him different? But you're right. The talent pool in which to get guys is so shallow now than it was when the season started, or even seasons 2 and 3. Because you're right. Everyone that's anyone has either been signed, and with 400 fighters under Zuffa contract right now, I mean, who else is there? And the only division in the UFC, or sorry, in MMA right now, that does not have the top talented fighters in Zuffa will be your flyweights, and those guys are coming next. And most of those guys are under deals with other promotions, but, you know, Tachi Palace Fights in California seems to be the ones pushing the flyweight division the most. And they've even said they know the UFC is going to come get our guys, but we were happy to have them, you know, while we were here. So yeah, you're right. Anyone that's anyone is already in Zuffa or Bellator, and anyone that's not gets snatched up really quickly.
Let's talk about the Mayweather fight last night very quickly. In the next segment, we'll talk about Night of Champions. You obviously saw the finish of, actually, the finish. It would have been the finish. And the post-fight argument with Floyd Mayweather, which actually is on the front page of our website right now at WrestlingObserver.com. And Larry Merchant, what were your thoughts on what Mayweather did? Was he in the right? Was he a dirty boxer? Where do you fall?
I tell you, I have seen enough wrestling, boxing, and MMA in my life to have seen everything. And last night was one for the books that I had not seen that. People have not seen it yet. You can go find clips on YouTube and maybe perhaps see it on ESPN and what have you. But essentially in the fourth round, Victor Ortiz went on a nice little flurry in the corner, basically bullying Mayweather into a corner. And then I don't think he got frustrated. He just basically launched himself and did a headbutt to Mayweather. And then referee Joe Cortez separates the two, obviously takes a point. You know, Ortiz is trying
That's
to
not allowed,
Mayweather.
I should note, for those that don't follow boxing. It's not allowed to do a diving headbutt on a man.
Exactly, exactly. So he, you know, Joe Cortez takes away a point, and then as, you know, Ortiz is like trying to hug Mayweather, almost like they were best friends, and he just, you know, wanted to make sure everything was cool. It was very, very strange. So as they're starting to separate out, all of a sudden, Cortez called time in. I didn't hear that. Cortez is looking off to the side during one of the judges to get what the time was or something. And then Mayweather essentially punches Ortiz in the face, and Ortiz is kind of staggered. And then the fight's on. He swings a hook, nails him, and knocks him down, and the fight's over just like that. And I guess we'll talk about that first in that aspect. That was just... It was legal, but was it sportsmanlike? I don't think so. I know the whole protect yourself at all times, but there gets to be a point when you have to look out for you just have to do the right thing. And to me, that wasn't the right thing. But, you know, they're already talking about a rematch. I don't know if anyone would want to see it, but it was just, it just reeked of like, just, it's almost like, come on. You know, people were booing. They were upset. And then the whole deal with Larry Merchant afterwards, that seems to be the fight everyone wants to see next, is Mayweather versus Merchant. I would buy that on pay-per-view.
I mentioned unsportsmanlike, but the man was given a ram-like diving headbutt.
It was, yes, that's the other point, which you're right. And I don't know what Victor Ortiz was thinking. Who does that in a major championship fight? And then after the fight, you know, I'd watched all the 24/7s leading up, and it just they do such a good job at building and, you know, just make you want to see this. Victor Ortiz is so intense and talking, you know, he can't stand Floyd Mayweather and all this stuff. Afterwards, he's just smiling, big smile, just didn't seem like he had lost his title, didn't seem like he had a care in the world, almost like John Cena, you know, when he lost the title a few months ago. He's just like, whatever, it's fine. It's just, Where's all that fire that you had for months leading up to this and all the build and all that stuff? It's like, who cares about seeing you again if you don't even care? The thing about Floyd Mayweather, as much as you may hate him or love him, the fact he makes you have a reaction to him one way or another, that's his best drawing card. And unfortunately, the fight that people want to see is Pacquiao versus Mayweather. Who knows if we'll ever see it, and I hope we do, just to get it out of the way and get a great fight. But last night was just another chapter in a very strange decade for boxing.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view, all of the matches, all of the storylines. It's coming up right after this show goes off the air. So we'll be back in just a moment with that. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Josh Nason, also of WrestlingObserver.com. I almost forgot Josh was on the show. Well, I didn't forget he was on the show, but normally we do a Mike Sempervivio, but he's not here today. But if you're missing Mike, or if you're thinking, my God, Josh Nason, what an awesome co-host. WrestlingObserver.com is the place for you to go. Daily radio shows. Mike Sempervivi, co-host of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Of course, myself, Figure Four Daily, Wrestling Observer Radio, the Brian and Vinny Show. I do about a million shows. Josh Nason, every other Wednesday. We do a show talking mixed martial arts, the news of the world, and interviewing some big stars. A couple of weeks ago, we had King Mo on the show, talking about his upcoming fight with Hodrick Gracie, which, of course, he won. So, a lot of stuff up on the website. Head over there, WrestlingObserver.com. If you like this show, if you like Wrestling Observer Live, you only get to hear it once per week. But if you head to WrestlingObserver.com and you sign up, you can hear these shows every single day. Dave Meltzer and I have done a Wrestling Observer Radio every day for the last 3 days so far. We've got another one coming up tonight, another one coming up tomorrow. Tonight, of course, covering Night of Champions, tomorrow covering Raw. And of course, later on this week, Jim Cornette is going to be on the show with myself and Dave. We've got Big John McCarthy scheduled as well. Joe Koff, the head of ROH, is going to be on the show on Tuesday, talking their new debut with Sinclair, plus all of the other shows we do as well. If you want a taste of it, head up to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. All you do is you click on it. There's no spyware. There's nothing to pay. You just click on it. It's an MP3. Download it. Put it on your iPad, your iPod, your phone, whatever you listen to your audio on. And if you enjoy what you hear, just think, we have over 3,000 hours of audio on the website for subscribers. It's $10.99 per month. That's it. $10.99 gets you all of the brand new shows, 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every single week, plus every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005. You can go through the archives. It'll literally take you forever until the end of time, particularly if the world ends in 2012. But you can get to work on that, so check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. I've said it a million times. If you like this show, if you like Wrestling Observer Live, if it's one of your favorite shows, I guarantee that you will love your subscription. And if you don't, you can email me and we'll make it right. But I guarantee you'll love it. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. And Josh, before we get to Night of Champions, get a couple plugs in for the stuff that you're doing.
Every month, Fight Magazine, you can read my various articles. This month, I actually have a feature on Alan Belcher. Next month, a feature on Phil Davis. So every month, you can catch me in Fight Magazine. People still read, everyone. So make sure you get a subscription. I think it's $20 for 2 years. So you can afford that with your WrestlingObserver.com money as well. So that's some great stuff there. You can read me in, actually, WGAMradio.com. You can hear me every Thursday night on the WGAM MMA show. All the archives are up there. Yeah, and every couple of weeks we do shows here on WrestlingObserver.com. We've interviewed Matt Mitrione, King Mo LaWall, Tim Kennedy, Pat Miletich, Jens Pulver, Brendan Schaub, Joe Warren, Ben Henderson, and we talk about everything with these guys. So it's great stuff. And also on the wrestling side, Brian and Dave have talked to who's who, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Bruno Sammartino, Mick Foley, Bret Hart, and Jim Cornette before, obviously a great guest coming up this week. So I will tell you, as someone that used to be a huge wrestling fan back in the day, I love listening to the older stuff, and it's great, and you get a sense of history. And I will guarantee as well that it'll be the best $10.99 you spend every single month. Guaranteed. Email me, and I will tell Brian to make it right if you don't agree.
That's right. Are you buying Night of Champions tonight?
No. No, I will not buy that because I know that will not potentially not get my money's worth like a Wrestling Observer subscription will.
Well, let's talk about Night of Champions here this evening. The main event of the show, at least as of the last time we checked, it is going to end with CM Punk versus Triple H. It's a no disqualification match. If CM Punk wins this match, they've already got a stipulation, everybody. It's the first match they've had together. They already have a stipulation. If Punk wins, Triple H is out as COO of WWE. Obviously, everybody's expecting Kevin Nash to do a run in this evening. He's scheduled to be at the pay-per-view, even though he's supposedly been fired, future endeavored. So I guess we'll see what happens here tonight, but my guess would be that Triple H wins. I mean, going all the way back, you know, the day after, a couple of days after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, they were going to do an angle where Triple H just pedigreed CM Punk in the middle of the ring and got talked out of doing that, but I wouldn't expect, be surprised to see another pedigree in the middle of the ring tonight. Makes no sense to strip Triple H of the COO duties already. They just started that storyline. And there's no stipulation if Punk wins. There's no wacky loser leaves town or anything like that. So really, I just figure Triple H beats him and we move on to the next chapter of this storyline.
Well, I think that if it's going to be the main event, and it sounds like that's confirmed, you're going to have to end with something big. And like you've talked about, I think like everyone expects is that if Triple H is involved in this, this is going to be his baby. He's going to keep, the storyline hot and keep going. So you're right. There's no real incentive or no real, stipulation if Punk loses. So here's my wild prediction what's going to happen tonight. Is that Triple H is going to win via some sort of form of interference by Kevin Nash and by John Laurinaitis, and there's going to be a new corporate faction being built. So all this stuff will be a swerve, and that they're actually going to make a legitimate quote unquote bad guy out of Triple H, because that's one of the things that's been really kind of hurting in this whole Triple H and Punk buildup is who are we supposed to root for? Who are we supposed to root against? Punk has really come across as very whiny in recent weeks, very annoying, and it's just complete dichotomy from where we were a month or so ago when this thing was so hot and all over ESPN.com. So I think we're going to go a little bit off the reservation. I think we're going to get a new corporate faction, and it's going to be pretty good. So I think my prediction: Triple H, Nash, and Laurinaitis will all be in the ring with their arms raised. And CM Punk will be defeated, and we'll have a nice group of heels to boo now.
So you think the full heel turn takes place tonight?
I think it takes place. I think it needs to. I think we need some people to boo, and this whole it's very ambiguous with these two. I think we need someone to boo, and I think Triple H will be that person after tonight.
I think Triple H wins, but I bet they do one more. Kevin Nash shows up. Something happens. Triple H wins. Did Nash help him? Was it an accident? Are they in cahoots? Are they not? You got to remember, I think the key to this whole thing is that Survivor Series is coming up in November, and they're going to do a 10-man tag with Rock and Cena, both wrestling. Rock and Cena are teaming up in a 10-man Survivor Series match. So we need three more guys on the babyface team. We need five guys on the heel team. I think Alberto Del Rio will be on the heel team, and maybe they'll put Triple H on there as well, and maybe Kevin Nash. So in between that date and today, we have three pay-per-views. We've got tonight, and we have two pay-per-views in October. That's a lot of stuff. So to me, you got to have something to build up these two pay-per-views coming up in October. And you got Hell in a Cell, which is coming up next. And then immediately after Hell in a Cell, I forget what the other one is, Bragging Rights or whatever it used to be. But regardless, you've got, let me find out for crying out loud, all of these shows. You've got, Hell in a Cell and then Vengeance. So
Vengeance.
Yeah, Vengeance is coming 2 weeks after Hell in a Cell. So to me, you do an ambiguous finish tonight, and then Hell in a Cell is next. And I don't even know how you make Hell in a Cell out of this if you got an ambiguous finish, but I'm just trying to make sense of all this. And then at Hell in a Cell, you can shoot your big angle with Triple H. And then Punk's like, I don't want my match next month. I want my match next week. And then they go, well, you got to wait 2 weeks for Vengeance. Then you do Vengeance, and then you do Survivor Series. Just a lot of shows between now and Survivor Series. So I think you just got to slow this down just a little bit to make sure you've got enough material for those next two shows.
Yeah, but they seem to be hell-bent on having Punk and Nash go at it, right? For some reason, the people, they really want to see Kevin Nash go in there, right? So if you're going to try to cover up for his physical ailments and his in-ring capabilities, what better place to do it than in Hell in a Cell when you can kind of use the cell as a distraction? Granted, it'd be better if you could allow blood, because obviously that would be a nice visual and nice distraction away. But I think I'm going to stick with my theory that Nash is going to go heel tonight with this new corporate faction. Hell in a Cell, we're going to get Punk versus Nash in a match that will help cover up for some of Nash's inadequacies. But, I know what you're saying about Survivor Series, and I was thinking, if they really try to, make Punk a huge star, and you have him actually on that team with, with Rock and Cena, does that take away from potentially, the second tier and the third tier match? Assuming that Randy Orton's probably going to defend his title, defending what happens with that, you try to make kind of a triple main event almost. So that could be something to think about. But you're right. You know, common sense would anyone with common sense will look at this and be like, why do you have so many pay-per-views in such a short amount of time? But that's the world of WWE that we live in. But I think we're going to look to CM Punk and Kevin Nash at Hell in a Cell coming up next.
You know, one thing about Hell in a Cell, though, is only the title matches are usually inside the cell, so that may not even be a cage match. But you could do a deal where you know, you do the finish tonight. Did Nash screw Punk or not? And, you know, Hunter's still trying to play innocent. And Punk demands the match with Nash, and you could do even like a street fight or something like that, where you have a lot of different wacky gimmicks. And so you do that match at Hell in the Cell on the undercard, and that could be the show where you do the same thing. Hunter screws Punk, and this time it's like, oh, did Hunter do it on purpose? Was it an accident? What happened? Or you could even screw Nash. It doesn't matter. Was it on purpose or accident? And then your vengeance match is the big three-way. And that's the match where Nash and Hunter team up and beat the hell out of Punk. And, you know, or you could even do, I don't know, there's a lot of different ways you could go. I'm trying to think of a way to do it without having to beat Punk a million times, but it may be just inevitable at this point. So
Initially, I was trying to think of a way that it would be Rock and Cena versus Triple H and Nash at Survivor Series. Before I learned it was 5-on-5, I'm like, wouldn't that just make sense? Just Hunter to try to get himself in the main event, that'd be the biggest angle, but then again, Punk would be out of it. So who knows? You know, what we're talking about today, as we talked about months and months and seems for years, is that everything is due to change on a whim, and all the plans that happen tonight could change a few times by the time the show actually airs, and plans for next week could change 10 times. So we just kind of wait and see.
Including whether or not Mark Henry ends up leaving with the world championship. We're going to talk about that after the break. We've got a short segment when we come back, so we'll talk about the Alberto Del Rio versus John Cena match. I think it's pretty straightforward where this one is going, but we'll talk about that here in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live. Actually, you know what? I almost jumped the gun there. We still got another 3 minutes, so let's talk about it right now. Alberto Del Rio and John Cena, singles match for the WWE Championship. I figure, you know, the reason they put the belt on Alberto Del Rio in the first place is because they've got a tour of Mexico coming up. And, you know, it does not make any sense to put the belt on Alberto Del Rio for a tour of Mexico and then do a pay-per-view and have John Cena win the belt back. So, on house shows, they've been doing disqualification finishes, that sort of thing, in the Alberto Del Rio-John Cena matches. So, I figure it's going to be something like that again. They'll do some sort of finish. John Cena will end up winning the match but not winning the title and probably setting up a rematch at one of the 8 million pay-per-views they have coming up. But I would be really surprised if John Cena left as the champion, which is also why I think that this match is not going on last.
I would agree with that. If it's going on third from the top or even second from the top, you can get away with a screw job finish and have Alberto lead. But yeah, I mean, Rio, he's still kind of developing his character with the title, right, as a champion. And I think it's been good. It hasn't been, like, blow-away awesome. But it kind of fits, right? The kind of the evil guys, the stuff they've been doing with Ricardo Rodriguez, and that's been kind of funny. But, you know, it's again, Cena in the title chase, you know, the same thing we've had time after time after time. We know he's going to get it back from Del Rio at some point. How they get there, you know, yeah, I can see disqualification finish and keeping this going and having him probably win the title at Vengeance, I would assume, before the big Rock build at Survivor Series.
Which actually, based on the finishes that we're predicting for some of these matches, that makes things very interesting as it pertains to Mark Henry. I want to see Mark Henry leave tonight as the champion. Will it happen? I don't know. But, you know, if John Cena and Alberto Del Rio, we'll talk about this after the break. I've got a theory here, and I really am going to the break this time, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Josh Nason, also of WrestlingObserver.com, Fight Magazine, a number of other outlets as well. We're talking about the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view, and this one is interesting in the sense that the argument last week in WWE was what match went on last. Is it going to be CM Punk, Triple H, or Alberto Del Rio and John Cena? I'm expecting John Cena to win the match, but not win the title. in the match with Alberto. So I don't think that one's going on last. And last we heard, CM Punk and Triple H was going on last, and I am expecting CM Punk to get screwed in that match. That's two finishes that are not baby faces going over. So if that's the case, why was it not open for discussion that Randy Orton versus Mark Henry go on last? If Randy Orton, the babyface, is going to beat Mark Henry and retain the title, perhaps that means that Mark Henry is going to beat Randy Orton for the title. Of course, it also could mean that they don't expect Randy Orton versus Mark Henry to be a good match at all, and you can't finish a pay-per-view with a bad match. But I am hoping that Mark Henry takes his title. I think Mark Henry is in the ring he's not great, but everything else about him is great. Great presence, great interviews. He really portrays himself as a monster and a giant. I thought the final segment on SmackDown this week with him and Randy Orton when he just destroyed everybody was absolutely awesome. And Nathan, do you have a soft spot in your heart for the World's Strongest Man?
Absolutely. He's a Hogan-era style heel. He's very King Kong Bundy-esque, I would dare say, in that he's a guy just destroying people, ripping them apart. And they built him up great. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he's been in the WWE for, 13-plus years or 15 years or something like that, which is another cool little nuance this whole thing they've been building up is that he's never won the title. So that's kind of a cool thing that even if you think Orton's going to win, there's still that backstory there. But yeah, we can talk about Morrison in the next segment. But this has been one of the nice little slow simmering burning feuds that they've had for the past month or so. And I think I think that Henry could walk away the title tonight, and hopefully they let him have a little bit of a run with it. But yeah, I think this is going to be a very interesting outcome tonight with Orton versus Mark Henry.
Back after the break, our hourly break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are this week by Josh Nason, Fight Magazine, WrestlingObserver.com. He's replacing Mike Sempervivi, who is currently in New Orleans drinking and partying and gallivanting after the awesome show that was UFC Jake versus Jake last night on Spike TV. We're here talking the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view, a big preview of that event, and all of the other news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, as well as Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94. And Josh, this Mark Henry situation we were talking about in the first hour, Mark Henry and the championship. You're hoping for a win and perhaps a long title reign. I'm hoping for a win. That's the best I can hope for.
Yeah, I think with SmackDown, it's kind of the experimental part of the WWE in that, you know, they gave Christian the title but didn't really give him any strong victories. But he was kind of a fun champion, and they had a nice run with Orton there over their 800 different matches or so. But I think Henry is a He's a change of pace, you know. He doesn't look like anyone else. He's a big guy, but he's obviously got a mean streak, which is kind of fun. There's some good dynamics with him and Orton. The fact he's just been destroying Orton over the past few weeks, as you mentioned, SmackDown closed really strong this week with the cutting edge segment, and they just kind of went at it and just fought off, you know, 15 guys or whatever it was and destroyed him. So this part of me thinks that, you know, Orton could just easily hit an RKO and win in, you know, 8 minutes with a three count. But with Henry, you know, it would be kind of cool to have him win the title, win it clean, and perhaps win for a few months and maybe have Orton play the role of chaser instead of champion.
We got a bunch of other matches to run down here as well, including a match for the a couple of championship matches. All championship matches on this show, except what might end up being the last match on the show, CM Punk versus Triple H. What an irony. We're going to talk about the rest of these matches when we come back from the break, give you our predictions and more. It airs right after this show goes off the air on pay-per-view, so check it out. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Fight Magazine's Josh Nason, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. And Josh, have you ever kicked caffeine?
Have I ever kicked caffeine? No, I'm firmly on the caffeine bandwagon. Have been for years and years and years, proudly.
How about that? Yeah, I'm trying to kick it the next couple of days, at least for a month or so.
Just need to, what are you doing that for?
My adrenals are burned out, I feel.
I don't even know what that is, but it sounds painful, and I wish you the best in luck.
Yeah, but anyway, the point I'm making is if I'm a little foggy on this show, if my memory is not the best, I am not, in fact, a drug addict. In fact, I'm trying to kick being a drug addict, the drug of caffeine. So I just wanted to get that out there in case people are like, man, Brian's just in a fog today. I am in a fog. Caffeine withdrawal. It sucks. I do this like every...
I would think most people blame that on TNA.
Yeah. Well, let me explain how this works for everybody, since this is, you know, drug use and wrestling go hand in hand. About every year this happens to me. I really get into the caffeine. You know, I drink a Monster Energy drink before this show, and then at night before my jiu-jitsu class, I have a little bit of caffeine, and, you know, everything is, like, great. And then, you know, after about 3-4 months, it's like all of a sudden I drink my Monster. It has no effect on me. And then I have my caffeine before my work. It has no effect on me. And then I'm like, I'm tired all the time, and I wake up and I'm tired. And it's like, okay, I've hit my caffeine wall here. Unless I want to try 2 Monster Energy drinks before the show, I need to go cold turkey and cut it. So you cut it out for like a month or so, and then you start back up again, and the fun starts, you know?
unique way of looking at things, Mr. Alvarez. I wish you luck with that, but caffeine will still be here when you decide to drop this cockamamie scheme.
Oh, believe me, I know it's going to be there. Now it's like a 1 month build to my next caffeine pay-per-view. That's the way I look at it here. Anyway, speaking of pay-per-views, this Night of Champions, we got some other highly caffeinated matches here on the show, including Kelly Kelly and Beth Phoenix for the Divas Championship. Who's winning this match, Josh?
For my money, this could be, again, a main event anywhere in the country. Shout out to Gorilla Monsoon. You know what I really liked when I saw it on SmackDown on Friday, and I have not seen SmackDown in a very long time, along with a group of most of America. I really like the Beth Phoenix character. I like how she's just, she's kind of a hot, like, tough chick, you know what I mean? She just goes in there and beats people up. Nice angle going with Natalya, and they're just, you know, butt kickers, you know what I mean? They just destroy people. And Kelly, you look at it, it's just how is she possibly going to win? And I think somehow she's going to pull this out, and Kelly will be the champion at the end of the night, just because it's unexpected. People think that, again, Beth Phoenix is going to destroy people, and she destroyed young AJ on a Friday Night SmackDown, who is very green and should not be on TV. Anyway, Kelly somehow is going to win the title, and Beth Phoenix, this is going to keep this going for another month or so.
Clearly, you have not watched SmackDown in a while, because while I'm not going to argue at all about how green AJ is, she looked like Ric Flair. I shouldn't even use Ric Flair this week. Ric Flair in his prime. How about that? She looked like Ric Flair in his prime compared to some of the matches she had on television about a month ago. I mean, these were all-time horrible matches. And this was actually a big improvement. But yeah, she is very green. And I think that Kelly is has pulled one out one time too many. I think Beth Phoenix is winning the championship tonight. That is my prediction. So, and you know how I am with predictions, Nason. You can take that one to the bank.
I will take it right now. Money in the bank.
Air Boom. God, what a horrible name. Air Boom against The Miz and R-Truth. Couldn't they call him like... I know this is almost as horrible, but how about Sonic Boom? What is an Air Boom?
I'm impressed they actually gave him a nickname, because that's so old school. It's like calling things wrestling and so on and so forth. To actually give guys team names. Imagine that.
I'm trying to think of there's a million names better than Air Boom, but they're facing Miz and Truth for the tag team championship. Air Boom. They're the champions, obviously. Miz and Truth, they got this title match based on the fact that they can cut promos, apparently. If you're going to do a feud, have the babyfaces go over here and do a rematch and maybe a couple before Miz and Truth win the titles, and then you can do a couple more matches. I mean, you can get 6 months out of this, or at least 4 or 5 months if you do it right. But Miz and Truth just beat them now. It seems like they're just kind of jumping the gun on this feud. Very well could happen, but I predict Air Boom, particularly since Miz and Truth beat him individually on television this week, I predict a win by Air Boom.
I would agree with that. Conventional booking would have you think that that would be the case, so that means probably that Miz and R-Truth will win like a two-minute squash. But yeah, I would say that Kingston and Bourne, you know, the tag titles are relatively meaningless, so I think they've kind of added a little bit of life to it. So, yeah, I think that, you know, you have them go over, beat the dastardly heels, and all of a sudden, you know, on Monday begins their next run of craziness, and they'll be upset and, you know, cheap shots and things like that. So I think that can help accentuate this kind of wildness that they're trying to portray with Miz and R-Truth. So, yeah, I would say Kingston and Bourne go over tonight, and this extends out for a little longer.
We have Dolph Ziggler against Jack Swagger, Alex Riley, and John Morrison in a four-way for the United States title, everybody. I know there's confusion whether it was the IC or the United States Championships. Two very prestigious titles here in 2011. But Dolph is the champion. Swagger, Riley, and Morrison, I guess, in contention. It doesn't matter. I would be surprised if Ziggler lost the title. Swagger, I mean, I guess it's possible. John Morrison is the U.S. champion. I don't know. The way they treat that title, if they want to do anything with Morrison, that's like a step down. I mean, if anything, I could see Dolph and Swagger screwing it up for each other, and Alex Riley wins his first ever championship in WWE, that being this U.S. belt. But I don't know. I think it's either Riley or Ziggler. I guess they could put it on Swagger, and that kind of, you know, Swagger pins Ziggler, and then that feud continues, or however they want to do it based around Vicky. I don't know why I'm putting so much thought into this particular match, but it's a four-way. It'll probably be pretty good.
For, you know, matches including four of the guys that are supposed to be the future of the WWE, certainly there's not much steam behind it by any means. I was surprised this match. I didn't even know this match was happening, to be honest with you. My thought is the way that things usually go is that they'll put the belt on Swagger to continue that wacky feud between Ziggler himself and Vicky, which again, just they didn't really let that cook too well. You know what I mean? They really jumped right into it and didn't let it build. So I think that they're going to put the belt on Swagger and continue that, and really Riley and Morrison are just here for some Morrison's there for the spots, Riley's there to take some bumps and so on, and I think Swagger's going to come away with a U.S. title, and no one will really care.
And then Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase for the Intercontinental Championship. They did an angle on SmackDown where Cody was bagging folks. And he's walking around the front row, and there's a guy in a bag who suddenly, it actually might have been Ortiz, did a big lunging, diving headbutt to poor Cody Rhodes, knocked him down, and then unmasked as DiBiase. And DiBiase went in the ring, gave him a good pummeling, and Cody bailed. And the people were really into the angle, which was astonishing, given Ted DiBiase was involved and the way they've pushed him of late. But Ted's a great worker. The people were into the angle. They were into the storyline. I just have this feeling that when the bell rings, they are not going to care at all about the wrestling match. And it's too bad, because I think it's probably going to be a pretty good match. But I don't know. It depends on what they're feeling about Ted DiBiase on this particular Sunday. If they want to do something with him, maybe he gets the title. If they don't, well, he won't get the title. So I guess we'll see, but it's a pretty important match for both guys.
Yeah, I tell you what, watching SmackDown, there's two things that screamed at me about this whole thing. One is that if you're going to have a guy go away for a little bit, and I don't know how long DiBiase's been away, but he looks the exact same. I've always had like the coolest gimmick possible for Ted DiBiase if you want to rebuild him. You know, he's supposed to be coming for money, and he has money and all that stuff, right? It's have him leave for 6 months, grow out his hair, grow a big beard, and almost make an angle like he's lost all his money, right? He's down on his luck, and it becomes interesting. You know, I saw him take that bag off. It's like, oh, he's clean-shaven again. He doesn't look like he's been gone. You know, what injury did he have? It's like, okay, this is happening. And then the whole Cody Rhodes thing with the bags.
Actually, let's talk about Cody Rhodes. We're up against a break here, and I want to talk about the bags, too. So we'll talk about Cody and his bags. Just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Josh Nason, also of WrestlingObserver.com, who hopefully not at one point during the show have I yet called Mike Sempervivi, but things happen. We're here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're in the middle. Actually, we're wrapping up the preview of the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view. We got a lot of other news to get into as well. But before we get to that news, we're talking about the Cody Rhodes-Ted DiBiase match, and Josh was discussing the bagging of Cody Rhodes, his bagging gimmick. Josh, what are your thoughts on this man putting bags on the head of fans?
It's so dumb. It's dumb the way they're doing it. It just, the idea should be, you don't, listen, I used to work in pro sports for 7 years, and people, one of the things I learned is that people love free anything. You know, you give a free pencils, and people would take pencils. They just love free stuff. So you have these two jamokes at ringside hanging out, handing out bags. No kidding. People are going to be taking the bags. They're going to be taking them and then putting them on their heads. But I thought the idea is that, you know, people shouldn't want to put the bags on their heads. But if you're giving them away and making it fun, then what's the point? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's the first time I've actually seen this on Friday. I'm like, I don't get it. The idea should be you don't give the fans any bags. You just bag the opponent's heads, almost like, you know, the way that the kind of the end of match thing where, you know, Jake the Snake, once the snake was on, it was like, that was the idea, is get the snake out of the bag. And, you know, the idea is that, you know, Cody wins these matches, he puts a bag on people's heads, and it's such a disrespect and all that. It's not a disrespect at all, because they're handing them out to the fans at ringside, and then they're showing the people wearing the bags at ringside. What is the point? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I've hated the bagging since day one. I thought it was so stupid. It's just, Cody's supposed to be like this dastardly heel, and when he first put on the mask and he just gotten injured, and, you know, he was actually doing a great job as kind of a dastardly heel, and then he brings out the bags, and he's putting bags on the fans' heads because they're ugly, and it's just like, you know, first off, calling the people ugly is like, it's such cheap heat, number one. Number two, you know, like you said, if you want to put the bag on your opponent's head after you beat him to try to humiliate him and he's all embarrassed because you bagged him, that's one thing. But when you have these people coming out and they've got these bags to put on the heads of the fans, it's not like you planted some fans and you try to put the bag on the fan's head and he freaks out and he's all insulted and you show that on television. Like, I can't believe you want to put a bag on me. Nothing like that. No, it's like, hey, we're going to give bags to real fans, and the fans are going to be excited and happy to put these bags on their head, and they're going to wear the bags throughout the match. It's like, if anything, this is a babyface move. It makes no sense. And I felt vindicated, because I ranted about this for months, and Cody just in an interview like a week ago, and he said, you know, I don't like doing this bag gimmick on the house shows. I don't think it works. It doesn't seem to be getting me any heat. And it's like, yeah! Correct! It's not getting you any heat because everybody likes when you put a bag on their head. They feel important. They feel like they're part of the show. So the bag thing has just got to go. They got to get the bag thing. I realize it's a way to get indie workers on television to hand out bags. I realize it's something that the fans can get into, but it's just, it's not working. It is not getting him heel heat. It is just, it's goofy. It's wacky. It's not working for me.
Right, giveaways make people feel good. This is a gimmick that's supposed to make people feel bad. They don't want to be associated with, you know, with putting bags on their heads and that they're not good looking or not, can't be seen by the public. So it was kind of weird. It's stupid. The other thing I thought was kind of dumb, and this, I don't know what it is with WWE, with pointing out people that don't have any quote unquote charisma. But if you notice during that opening segment on SmackDown, when Edge was, Cody Rhodes came out and did a promo while Edge was doing his, you know, his thank you to Toronto deal. You know, and just like, you know, you're the son of Dusty Rhodes and you don't have any of his charisma. And it's like, why do they have to keep pointing these things out? That's the worst thing. You say he's like a jerk or say he's not a common man or something like that, but don't take apart the guy's charisma. I don't get this obsession with, like, you know, ripping on guys that don't have that natural charisma like others do. Why point that out? Hide that stuff.
So the Night of Champions show is coming up immediately after this program goes off the air. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of the website, WrestlingObserver.com. You can go there to find out what happened, who beat who. And then tonight, full rundown and analysis of the show, all of the angles, how this leads into Raw on Monday night, also at WrestlingObserver.com. A brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio only for subscribers, so check that out. This past Thursday night, Josh, I know you saw the Ric Flair versus Sting match. It was a very sad match. God, it was a sad match. I mean, I was so depressed. We were doing a radio show, and I got to talking about it. I better not talk about it too much today, because when I was done talking about it, I just shut off the show. I shut off my own show. It's just too depressing. And what did you think?
That was very sad. Full disclosure, I'm not a big TNA fan. I'll sometimes flip by it when there's not other sports on, or, you know, test patterns or things like that. So I'll watch TNA every once in a while, but it just doesn't work for me at all. So I happen to I live outside of Boston, about 45 minutes. I'm a huge Red Sox fan. Red Sox game was over, and I was flipping around. I'm like, 10:45. So I'll check in what's going on in TNA, see if there's anything good. And lo and behold, Ric Flair and Sting are in the ring for the first time in, God, since I remember watching them at the very end of the Nitro era when WWE bought them. It was very sad. Ric Flair looked very old. Just slow motion at a lot of parts. Even the Flair flop wasn't clean. And I'm just sitting there watching this, and I'm like, I didn't feel good watching it. Flair is just, I mean, he's basically bald. You know, his hair just looks like just really dry and thin. He doesn't look like a star anymore. And then there's Sting, who looked, you know, Sting is what, 54 years old or something like that? And
52.
He looked the better of the two. And then also, you know, the end of the match, I can't remember how the match ended. I think Flair may have tapped to the Scorpion Deathlock, I think, if I remember right. And then you have Hogan coming out, and it's just like, what is Hulk Hogan doing? It's Sting and Hogan. It's just, I mean, it's 2011, and this organization is trying to compete with WWE and trying to even get mentioned in the same sentence. And the pushing guys are in their 50s and their 60s. I don't get it. And I felt very sad watching that match. And I wish things would turn out differently than Flair. And I've been actually checking out some different stuff since the Grantland article came out, 3 weeks ago or whatever. And just seeing what other wrestlers had to say. I know Triple H has had some comments that Flair is going to be Flair. No one's going to tell him how to live his life. So people seem to be resigned to that. But you just wish that people would kind of, you know, band together and almost help him out, almost an intervention, so to speak. But, yeah, very sad scene on Thursday, but that seems to be the case with TNA these days.
Yeah, just sad match. Flair injured a bursa sac in his elbow on that superplex, and then from that point it really fell apart. And, you know, we saw the edited version. You know, reports from the building, live version, much worse. And just a sad match leading to, I mean, think about this. You know, Ric Flair is way more mobile than Hulk Hogan. And they want to do Hulk Hogan and Sting at Bound for Glory. They're teasing the match isn't going to take place. They're teasing that Hogan and Eric are going to leave. I mean, I don't know what's going on. I personally would be surprised if Hogan and Eric left, because I mentioned a million times, Hogan's got no money. He's got no money. This is not like back in the day when he could make decisions based on who was going to pay him the most, and it didn't matter because he had a ton of money lying around. He has no money. And, you know, Bischoff has got projects, and he wants to keep his name out there, so I don't think they're going anywhere. So the idea that Hogan is retiring is preposterous. He's going to do whatever he can to get into the ring. I don't know what they're going to do, but it's just sad. Just sad to watch this in 2011, especially coming off that, you know, you didn't see the pay-per-view last weekend, but just a depressing pay-per-view. A show nobody cared about. The matches weren't good. I mean, sometimes you'll get a pay-per-view that's like, it's got a lot of bad finishes to good matches, or it's got a bunch of good matches, but the booking is horrible. This was like, you know, the booking was no good. The finishes sucked. It was like five people had stuff sprayed into their eyes on this one show, including the finish of the main event. So why you had it on the undercard, I have no idea. But you had bad booking, bad finishes, and on top of that, you just pretty much had bad wrestling. It's just a sad, pathetic night, and nothing new. Nothing new in the world of TNA. And speaking of...
On that same vein, actually, I wanted to ask you about this, is Bret Hart competed, quote-unquote, in the main event tag match. I believe it was this past Monday on Raw, teaming with John Cena against... I am now completely blanking who they were facing. It was Alberto and Ricardo. Mm-hmm. I believe that was this past Monday, correct?
Yeah, yes.
And you're talking about guys that shouldn't be in the ring. I just, you know, Brett's out there wrestling in, you know, cargo shorts and Nike low top shoes, and just, I don't know. I don't need to see. Everyone knows that he had a stroke. Everyone knows that he's physically not where he was, but I don't know. I think at some point, I realize they're wrestling promoters, and I realize that the tendency is to, you know, do what fans want to see and all this stuff. But God, I wish people would just have some common sense and protect these guys and put them in roles that don't point out the obvious physical flaws or ailments. You know what I mean? It's frustrating that anyone in this day and age would decide to put on, you know, Ric Flair in a main event in 2011 on TV in that condition. And they'll probably have him go out there and compete again. Same thing with Bret Hart. It's like, what is the point of that, of him competing last week? Just for a quick pop, he puts a bad sharpshooter on. I mean, he could have done that after a singles match, acting as almost like a manager role at ringside. But instead, it says he doesn't look like he's competing. Again, he looks like a guy off the street. And all week you have Michael Cole ripping on him, saying he looks like a homeless guy. I'm like, this is a guy that so many people, mainstream fans, know, and you're not trying to even protect him with your announcing. I don't get it. These are probably the things that have jilted me as a fan through the years, and have driven me to things like MMA and why I like MMA a lot better. Is they treat their former champions and their stars like Liddell's and Couture's and so on with reverence, and you don't seem to get that with TNA or WWE, and it's kind of sad to watch from this side of the fence.
Yeah, when you can't do anything, I mean, you shouldn't be in the ring as a wrestler. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with Bret Hart to get, you know, old Bret Hart fans happy to see him. You know, this was an example of you did something that made people sad to see him. And nobody wants that. And you don't need to do that. You know, we can't even throw a punch. You can't even throw a kick. You don't need to be in the ring as a worker. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows the story. And it was just a lot of sad stuff in wrestling. I don't really want to talk about this.
You know, wrestling's supposed to be happy and fun and make people, it's supposed to be your serious moments and things like that, not goofy John Cena stuff all the time. But, you know, there's some times where it's just like, it's good to smile and it's good to be just like, you know what, that was pretty good. And with these stars, those should be the moments, your past champions, those should be the moments. You know what I mean?
Well, we're going to talk about, actually, we got to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about happy, smiley moments. Not Matt Hardy's latest accident. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Fight Magazine's Josh Nace and also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk some happy news in pro wrestling, or at least some somewhat positive news. The Rock is back, and he can work, and he's going to be teaming with John Cena. First time, last time they're plugging at Survivor Series this year. What do you think of this idea? Do you think John Cena should be back in the ring, or Rock should be back in the ring prior to his match with John Cena at WrestleMania, or would you have held him off?
Would have held them off, no doubt about it. The name of the game is to draw money. And no matter what anyone thinks, it's to draw money. Pay-per-view buys and so on. People know that Rock is coming back next year at WrestleMania. You know, people, they drilled that home. It made the rounds. The old-school fans know it. I have friends that used to be out of it, used to be big into wrestling. They're aware of it, right? So that's the idea, is that you want his first match back, and probably ideally is his last match will be next year, and you'll be waiting for this for years and years and years. And you almost heard that by having him at Survivor Series. And I understand that they're trying to maybe pop an extra buy right here, but isn't the goal to make WrestleMania like the biggest deal, right? That's your biggest, your granddaddy, your big-time pay-per-view of the year. That should be the time he competes. So for some reason, I'm surprised that they're doing that, which makes me think that maybe they have something else up their sleeves that they think, regardless, this is not going to hurt the WrestleMania pay-per-view buy rate. But I think if you have any shot of potentially hurting that buy rate, you don't put them on Survivor Series. You let this simmer, you let it boil, and you really start building it and making it hot from January with the Royal Rumble on. I don't think you can have Rock do an appearance. I realize it's Madison Square Garden and what have you, but figure out a different way to give value to those people rather than saying, oh, we have to have Rock here. There's a different way of doing it, and I'm surprised they're having him come back this soon.
I want to give you a chance. We're going to do some questions here, but before we do, I want to give you a chance to talk about Triple H and his comments about UFC. And first off, tell everybody a little bit about what he said, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, basically, it was an interview he was doing recently for, I think it was helping promote the DVD release of his latest movie, Inside Out, I believe the name of it is. And they were asking him, and I'm surprised he actually, you know, said the name UFC, which is surprising. I thought they weren't competition and what have you. But essentially what he alluded to was that the UFC is the one that needs to evolve and more so than WWE does. And the WWE, you know, provides entertainment in all their matches every single night they're on. And with, you know, UFC, you know, some events, obviously you're going to get, you know, boring fights or longer fights or what have you. But essentially just kind of like that, the feeling that WWE didn't need to evolve and that UFC did need to evolve. And I'm not, really not sure what he really means by that in terms of, you know, again, you look at last year's pay-per-view buy rates alone, I think that would probably indicate that UFC has evolved. And granted, there's some problems with too many shows and, you know, so on and so forth. But it was funny that, you know, CM Punk actually responded via Twitter and said, you know, said that it was crazy what Triple H was saying, which kind of lends, you know, itself to whatever interpretation you have there, CM Punk being a pretty big MMA fan. So I just, you know, these are situations where I understand a little bit of what Triple H is looking to do and protect himself. But again, when he keeps pretending that there's not a problem, all you have to do is look at numbers. You look at ratings, which they're going to start hurting and now they're going up against Monday Night Football. We saw evidence of that last week. You look at pay-per-view buy rates. You look at the conversions from TV. People are not buying pay-per-views like they were, but they are in the UFC overall. So I just it's sad to hear it. But if he's right, if maybe this will be the kind of promotional war that will get them going again, that's great. But I don't think anything's going to change. And that comment that he made a couple weeks ago of saying, "Well, a lot of people like WWE." That's a scary comment. That's a very scary comment.
Well, that's true. I should say one thing. I mean, you know, he said a lot of things that were really stupid. But at the same time, in that interview, he said a lot of things that were pretty smart. I mean, he did make some good points about the fact that all sports are entertainment. You know, whether it's a sport or not, I mean, this is entertainment. It has to be entertaining. You know, when you go out there and you know, you have a show like last night's show that overall was kind of boring, at least until the main event. You know, there were some good points to be made there, but the problem is, you know, he was just ripped apart for everything else, and nobody really looked at any of the good points.
No, I would agree with that, and that all sports are entertainment. I think that, you know, baseball, football, all that. I mean, there's a reason that that they're such a hot TV commodities because they are entertainment, no doubt about it. And you have to make them as big as they can, the spectacles that they can. I think the UFC hasn't helped themselves by kind of thinning out their product by having some of these shows. I mean, Shields versus Ellenberger would have been a perfect third fight from the top this Saturday at Rampage John Jones instead of having Travis Brown versus Rob Broughton, for example. You know, you have to really pack and provide value, which is part of that. So, yeah, entertainment is part of sports, and people that don't understand it are the ones that are going to evolve or not evolve and die. But, you know, it's kind of one of those glass houses type things where, you know, WWE controls all their entertainment, but yet they can't seem to get over this hump with getting people to buy. And why is that? You know, you can try to blame things on piracy and all this, but ultimately you want to give people stuff they're willing to pay to see conclude, and WWE hasn't done that. I think if they were running hot like they were, you know, in the 90s, late 90s, when they're having that huge run and they were saying that, and this is a different era, sure, they could definitely say that. Say, look at our numbers. We're kicking butt and taking names and what have you, but I don't know. It's one of those things. I think probably the MMA crowd jumped to kind of defend their sport a little bit. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it is entertainment. I think UFC understands that. I don't know if the illusion was that they don't, but they certainly do. And I think next year is going to be a very interesting year in terms of events, how many events they have, and so on. And you know, if they understand that a little bit more, I guess, especially with the Fox deal.
So some of the mailbag questions here. What are the odds of X-Pac running in tonight rather than Kevin Nash? I would rather see Punk versus X-Pac than versus Nash. Well, the plan is Punk and Nash, so I think that's the one you're going to see. I guess it's possible, but I have heard nothing in that direction. I don't think you're going to see Waltman tonight. I suppose anything can happen. But my guess is that it's not happening. Any thoughts on that there, Josh?
Well, based on thinking ahead, if I was going to have him run in, or depending on how long they have this booked out, I mean, I can't remember where the show tonight is. It's Buffalo, New York, correct?
I believe so. Yeah,
I believe they mentioned it on SmackDown. So, I mean, what crowd is probably going to pop more for an X-Pac run in? Buffalo, New York, or New York? So, I think if you're going to use him in any bit, use him from a crowd that's going to pop once for him, like New York. Similar to what they did for Nash in Boston when he came in for the Royal Rumble. I think you really got to pick your spot if you were to use him. But I think that'd be kind of a fun thing, but I don't know if I want to see him in an extended run. You know what I mean?
This person says, what are the chances Mick Foley will be a part of Rock and Cena's team at Survivor Series? If so, when Foley signs, are these the kind of matches they would consider booking him in for nostalgia's sake, or would they rather book him in against up-and-coming stars to get the rub from teaming with The Rock? I don't know, but that is not the worst idea in the world to put Foley on that Survivor Series team.
Certainly isn't. Talk about entertainment. That would be very entertaining. But you also, it goes back to this weighing of old stars versus new stars. And you can't do what TNA does and completely book with like the old guys from the 90s and not have them give the rub to the younger guys. So it would be fun for a one-off event for sure. But again, you got to make sure that some of these other guys are getting elevated along with that. If you were to attach, say, a CM Punk to a Mick Foley, for example, which would make a lot of sense given some of the comments recently in these back and forths, yeah, that'd be kind of fun to do. So the idea is that Foley helps elevate Punk to a higher level. If that's not accomplished, then it's kind of what was the point?
This person says, just a fun question after hearing Ben Henderson wanted to make the match with Guida hair versus hair. If you were to infuse a WWE stip into a UFC match, what would it be? I'd like Lesnar versus Mir 3, Lesnar's career if Mir wins, and 1 minute in the ring alone with Mazzagatti if Lesnar wins. That's not a bad one.
That's a million. That would be awesome. The hair versus hair, because there's not a lot of guys with long hair. I think that would be kind of fun. Boy, the Mazzagatti. Yeah, the Mazzagatti thing would be pretty awesome. I got to admit, a three-way dance I think would be kind of fun. You know what I mean? Especially if say you put in Maynard, Edgar, and a third party. Say it was like the winner of Henderson. Put Ben Henderson in as a third guy. I would say a three-way UFC fight would be kind of interesting. But I think hair versus hair. I love that with Pettis Guida and Henderson, rather. I think that'd be kind of fun to have. Or you could do something where the loser has to tattoo a picture of the winner on their back.
Sure. I just want to see tag team matches.
Oh, no. Did you see that video from, 2 years ago of tag team MMA? Have you seen that?
No, I've been to live tag team MMA.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. They, in fact, I went to... Jesus Christ, I can't even remember the name of the place. It's like right, it's caffeine withdrawal here. But anyway, right down in Kirkland, there's a pretty famous MMA school, old school. Anyway, the point is, I went down there like 10 years ago, and they were doing tag team MMA matches. And this was just on your normal, school MMA show, and fans showed up. And the fans liked all the matches, but my God, did they love those tag team matches. I mean, they love the tag team match. And coincidentally, on that show, there was a fella, a former UW football star that was supposed to fight. And he was supposed to fight on that show, but his fight ended up being pulled because he just signed a deal to go to Japan. And he was there just saying hello to everybody. And his name was Bob Sapp.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Sapp. Talking about a guy that can cut a promo. Man, that promo of him in Lederhosen from last month, that is a must-see if you folks have not seen that. Find that on YouTube. You will not be entertained. A very entertaining 2.5 minutes. Awesome. Awesome stuff.
All right, this person says, any news on how or if the new UFC events on Fox will air in the UK? And for Josh, how does it feel to go 5-for-5 in last night's fight night? Let's start with that.
It feels great. Feels great. I am probably the top prognosticator MMA picker in the world, I would say. So WrestlingObserver.com is very lucky to have me. And but in all seriousness, it's fun. It's a crapshoot with some of these, as everyone knows. Swing of a punch, kick, submission, all this stuff, just everything can change. It's just like betting on NFL games. Anything can happen. So it was fun. 5-for-5, it was pretty fun. I hope people are having fun with the picks. I'd like it, it's kind of cool to have the Todd squad getting in there with his picks, and obviously the Tough Talk guys and Mike Sempervivi, who I've successfully ousted from the Sunday Wrestling Observer Live show. As far as the deal in the UK, I haven't heard anything else on it, but as Dana says, we'll work those things out. And I would assume that will be A-OK, so for maximum worldwide exposure for the UFC and Fox.
He also says, which is more overrated, Brock Lesnar's wrestling or Alistair Overeem's striking? I don't think either are overrated.
I would say, I don't think either overrated. If I had to lean towards one, it'd probably be Alistair Overeem, simply because of the quality of competition he's fought. I mean, he's knocking out Todd Duffy, but again, it's Todd Duffy.
Yeah, but he's talking overall striking, and this is a man who won the K-1 Grand Prix.
Oh, I see. I don't think either is overrated. I think Brock has shown he has obviously significant skills on the ground, and Overeem is Overeem. And, yeah, I don't think either one is overrated, to be honest with you. I think they're pretty equal. I can't wait for that fight. That's going to be awesome.
It says, considering Murphy from TNA's real name is Michael Cole, could TNA have gotten any sort of legal trouble if they'd used his real name as his ring name? I don't think so. It's his real name.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It'd be kind of a funny twist. I mean, if they're looking to get WWE's attention by mentioning him during promos, why wouldn't they do something like that? That would be kind of funny.
All right, let's see if we've got anything.
You could have him be the most annoying promo guy in the whole world. How about that?
Mm-hmm. All right. What would a full-time WWE ref make in a year? Do they help with ring setup and such? I don't know what they make. Probably depends on your whether you're senior or junior referee. But yes, they do help with the ring setup. I'd guess probably $60,000 a year, but I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. But
who would you say is their top ref? Is it still Mike Chioda?
Didn't he just get busted on a wellness suspension? That may have hurt his standing.
Was that him?
Anyway.
It could be. I know Mike Chioda, and I know Nunzio is a ref. Those are my two WWE refs that I know.
We got to head to a break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Josh Nason here, Fight Magazine, WrestlingObserver.com. Before we go today, a big prediction for Josh Nason. Big fight coming up. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. It is, in fact, Fedor Emelianenko against Jeff Monson. What's your prediction, Josh?
My prediction is Fedor is going to win via probably unanimous decision. Monson is very difficult to finish, but you're right. This is the fight that the world is going to be talking about in Russia. I mean, it's going to bring a country together. It's going to bring the world together. Fedor defeating Jeff Monson via unanimous decision and rightfully reclaiming his position as the top heavyweight in the world, according to message boards everywhere.
Now, very quickly, you got about 30 seconds. Rampage Jones, who's winning?
I am going to go with John Jones. Boy, this is like a 51-49% type of thing. There's something about Rampage that just, it's leading me to believe that he's going to have a better shot than a lot of people are giving him, including myself. But I'm going to go with the future of the UFC, the now of the UFC. John Jones winning by, I'm going to go by third round TKO, and his star will continue to rise for his battle with Rashad Evans.
For the record, I'm picking Jones as well, so write that down in your MMA Figure Four Weekly Staff Picks, which, of course, is available at WrestlingObserver.com. Everybody, we're going to wrap it up today, but fear not, there's far more to come. We'll be back next week on Sports Byline, the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94. We'll be back tonight, WrestlingObserver.com, only for subscribers. Myself and Dave Meltzer running down the results of Night of Champions, which, in fact, takes place moments after this show goes off the air, headlined by Triple H versus CM Punk in a match with Triple H's COO role on the line. Kevin Nash is scheduled to be in the building. We've got world title matches, Alberto Del Rio versus John Cena, and of course Randy Orton versus Mark Henry. So a lot of stuff coming up, plus Raw tomorrow. Dave Meltzer and I back after Raw. Tons of stuff coming up. I want to thank Josh, as always, for doing this show and all of the other shows we do up at WrestlingObserver.com. And thanks everybody for listening. We shall be back next week with a brand new show, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.